Hello, this is Michelle Ogutu interviewing Shamil Ross. It is March the 23rd, 2021. We're currently interviewing through Zencastr. This is for the Southwest Virginia Oral History Project. Okay, Shamil, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I think there's so many things to say, right? I am a 40-year-old Black woman who ha was raised here in Roanoke, Virginia, but I was born in San Diego, California. My mother was in the Navy, so we did a little travel a little earlier in my life, but eventually it led back here to Roanoke, where my mother was born and raised. I grew up in the school systems here, so went to Fairview Elementary, Addison Middle School, and Patrick Henry High School. And then I went to undergrad at FAIRM, where I got a degree in political science and social work. And I have been employed at Allstate for about 16 years this past Friday. So.
Okay, wow, very, very interesting. So when did you move back to the Roanoke Valley area? I know you mentioned that before.
Yeah, we so after being born in San Diego, and I would really love to say that that was a really long stay, but I think I was there 3 days. And then my mother came back to Roanoke and was stationed in the Philippines. So she dropped me here with family after having me, and then she was stationed in the Philippines, and once she got settled there, she sent back for me. So I was in the Philippines for about 18 months to 2 years. And then we came back to the States and did some short stays in North Carolina. And then we came back to Roanoke after my mom went into the reserves and was no longer active duty.
Okay, that's very interesting. Do you think that the traveling affected like who you were as a child and also just growing up in your teens?
I don't think so, because I think I was so little that I don't really remember much of it. There were times where I would, really impress my mom, because I would ask her certain questions and she was like, "How do you remember that? You were so small." But I think that the travel piece of it is not something that really impacted my life, growing up here, because we seemed very stationary for a really long time. So.
Yes, no, that makes a lot of sense. And how was your high school experience here at Roanoke?
So school was really good. I had a lot of friends. I was a little weird, but I think that all of us were, a little weird when we're in our prepubescent to pubescent stages. It was a little different as far as like the transition from elementary school, middle school to high school, because Roanoke at that time was still a little segregated. So in middle school, after middle school, I went to Lucy Addison, which is a predominantly Black middle school. But I lived in the William Fleming district, and they were trying to diversify Patrick Henry. So there were several of my friends who got bused to PH to help with their numbers and diversity, because a lot of those students would have ended up at William Fleming just because of how the districts were set up. So my mom was okay with that, because number one, she went to Patrick Henry, so she was like, "You will go where I went."
Yes.
she definitely wanted us to be patriots. So we were sort of bussed over to PH, even though that was not the district that we were in.
Yeah, that makes sense. And how was that experience, especially just being a minority in that school?
It wasn't bad, just because being on a bus with other students who you had always gone to school with, you never really felt isolated, because you knew the people in your neighborhood who were also going over to PH for their education. So it didn't really feel as segregated as it sounds. So I think I got a really good education at PH, and I think that there was some opportunities there that I took full advantage of. And not saying that I wouldn't have gotten them at Fleming, it's just that there were opportunities there that I took advantage of. So
Yes.
But yeah, I don't understand where there was much of an impact there. But I think it definitely prepared me for undergrad because Ferrum had a very low number of minority students there. So having had the experience at PH, it was a easier transition for me to go to Ferrum because the demographic looked very similar. So.
Yes, that is true. And how was your experience, like transitioning from the Roanoke area into Ferrum, especially just that being in the South?
So I laugh because so I know that there are a lot of people, especially people who grew up in this area, who don't look at Roanoke as a city or a bigger city or a metropolitan city. But when you compare it to the rural areas, it definitely is. So there was a bit of a culture shock there because at that time, that was about 20 years ago at this point, Ferrum was not as developed as it is now. So the only thing that we had out, out that way was like a little gas station store, and then you had to ride 20, 25 minutes into like the Walmart, and that was like all you had. So, and then if you didn't have a car, that was a totally different experience. And then two, there were, people who were into agriculture, who grew up on farms and stuff. And, I was used to concrete living. We were used to, a more concrete jungle. And those folks were, more used to, a lot of those folks were more used to like nature and farming. So there were a lot of things that I did not understand when it came down to lived experiences for some of my classmates and stuff. So that was a bit of a culture shock.
Yes, I can only imagine. Did you feel comfortable at the school? Like, how was your experience just transitioning in and staying there?
It was really good because I think that there was really nothing for you to get in trouble doing. I think that that was really, helpful. And not that I was ever one to, get into trouble, but it was like, the only focus that you really had, was your schoolwork. And it was just a constant reminder of like, this is what you're here for. You're here to, get an education. And then you find your opportunities to create your own fun. And I think that those were some of the life lessons that I took away from that experience. Because, because the minority population at Ferrum was so small, a lot of times the activities and things that they would have on campus, we couldn't see ourselves reflected in. So it was one of those things where, when you don't have folks who are asking for different types of activities, then you just sort of do the same things over and over again, right? So the one thing that we recognize is that, we have to use our voices to say and speak our needs, but then at the same time, we have to actively be a part of the change that we want to see. So one thing that I did was joined a lot of the organizations. So they had Panther Productions, which is the activity programming group for campus. And then I encouraged a lot of my friends to join because I was like, I could go and speak for us, but if we all go, then that's a louder voice. Got a bunch of my friends to join so that we could, be a part of the programming and not just have, folks who think that they are hearing what our needs are, but we can actively be a part of, making the change. So that was really a really good start to activism, whether it's, being an activist for myself or being an activist for my community. That was where I sort of cut my teeth in that space. I was really impressed with some of the things that we were able to do over the 3 years that I was an active part of that, where we got to, at that time, 102 Jams in Greensboro was like one of the big radio stations. So for them to come to Ferrum and host a party live was like, and to have some, bigger name artists, like we had the Roots come. What?
Wow, how is that?
I know, right? So the Roots came to Ferrum, and it was like people were like, "What in the world are y'all doing?" But it was just because, we showed them like we can get people to come. And for those of us who were based out of Roanoke or surrounding areas, you know, we would just put in a call to our friends back at home and just say, we need y'all to come and flood, you know, like come in masses, bring carloads of folks up here so that we can show people that it's not just us asking for things, but just understanding that, you know, the entertainment that we like is a part of popular culture as well. So like people will come if we have it. So what we started to do was just inviting like all kinds of people to come up to the different activities. We found that the student population, a lot of times what would happen is they would leave campus during the weekends, but they started to stay on campus because the activities were ones that they enjoyed and they didn't have to go, you know, all the way to Greensboro or all the way to Tech or Radford to be able to enjoy themselves. They could do it at their own home campus. And then, you know, you bring the townies in or you bring the people from the surrounding communities in and you just add to the numbers, right? Yeah. And then money, you know, money matters. So charging $10, you know, $15 at the door, we're able to say we brought people, but also look, this event paid for itself.
Yes, yes. No, that is true. That's really amazing. Like, I'm really honestly just shocked by that. Do you feel like that experience really kind of just shaped you into the activist that you are now?
I think it did because it showed how a collective of people can bring about change, right? So it showed where one person can be the spark, but a collective of people could be the fire. And to be able to go back to campus now and see how the numbers as far as diversity have improved, how the activities have improved, and seeing people stay on campus, I think a little piece of that, I sort of, you know, I'm like, maybe I started a little bit of that, you know, so I can just, you know, see myself there. And, you know, hopefully those things that we started continued and have helped the college to continue to help with diversity efforts. And because it's a really good school, it's a really, really good school. But, you know, there has to be a good mix of a quality education, but it's something that is enticing for students to stay on campus and be a part of campus culture. So,
yes, yes. No, that is very true. Especially here at Roanoke, like that is something that we're also striving to do. Apart from being involved in those activities, were you ever part of anything with the LGBTQ plus community at that college? Do they have anything at that time?
So they did, but at that time I was still finding myself. So I think that while I knew that I felt a little different, I don't know that I had a name or a title for it. Mm-hmm. I know that there has been a transition in time. I'm not saying that everybody in 2021, you know, feels open and out and, you know, yelling it from the rooftops, but it was, you didn't see it as much back, you know, 20 years ago on campus. So at that point, I was sort of focusing on the other intersection of myself, and that was making sure that the Black community felt, you know, loved and supported and uplifted on campus. So I didn't really have much involvement in any of the LGBT issues on campus.
Okay. I mean, that makes sense. Like, college is still a time when we're trying to figure ourselves out. Do you feel like, when did you begin to realize that, like, you weren't straight? Was it during your college years or more so after when you graduated?
So I think it's one of those things that I talk about with my friends a lot. It's I think you come out to yourself several times before you actually have that real conversation with yourself. Mm-hmm. I think it started for me really early. So maybe when I was about 5 or so, there was a little girl that I thought was like really pretty. And I was like wondering, like, you know, those fairy tales that you tell yourself about, like, oh, you know, we could get married, but then that just didn't feel like that was an okay thing. Right. So, yes. It was something that you sort of suppress and say, like, I can just think that, you know, to myself, for this moment, but then I have to sort of tuck that away and you better not say that out loud.
Yeah. Right?
And then I think in different parts of my life that sort of popped up, and I just would sort of suppress it, but not until after I graduated from Ferrum, and I went to law school at Duquesne in Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And I think the difference between the time at Ferrum and the time at Duquesne was that while at Ferrum, I was, you know, 55 minutes away from home.
Yeah.
And plus I was on campus with people that I went to high school with. So I was surrounded with people that I knew. And so I was always busy, right?
Yeah.
And there was always something to do. But when I was at Duquesne, and Pittsburgh being, you know, the furthest that I had ever been away from home by myself,
yes,
without the support of family, you spend a lot of time with yourself and a lot of time having conversation with yourself. And at that point, I couldn't suppress it because there was nothing to suppress it with. So I was like, you know, this has come up many times in my life. So maybe it's time for me to have an honest conversation with myself about what these feelings are.
Yes, that makes sense. And sorry, just going back a little bit, do you feel like something like triggered you into having this conversation, or did you just, you know, decide, hey, like, this is the time that I really need to think and talk about this to myself?
I think it was just loneliness. So while I am an extrovert now, that was not always the case. And I was, you know, a little shy. And then being in Pittsburgh, like, it's different because, like, I don't hear it, but sometimes other people do, the accent, because I can get real Southern real quick.
Yeah.
And you sort of feel like a little bit of an outsider because, you know, there are things that are done in the South that are a little different than other places. So, you know, you sort of feel like an outsider. And, you know, it's the only thing that you do is sort of, you know, find solace within yourself because that's familiar, right? And so I think it was just one of those things where, like, all these different feelings of, like, you know, what kind of woman do you want to be? And there were a lot of life decisions that I had to think about, you know, in that time. And that was just one of the feelings that came up. And it was like, okay, now what is this? You know, what is this feeling that you've been suppressing all these years? And what do we do with it? So.
Yes. Yes. No, that makes a lot of sense. And how did the conversation, like, start? Because you said you did have to, like, come to a point where you had to, like, you know, really address how you're feeling.
So it was interesting because, you know, I hadn't really thought about it until you asked that question just now, but the first memory that came up was that everything was under the cover of darkness. So I'm in this room, like, 100%, like, by myself, and they had put me, I was one of few law students who lived in the dorm. So a lot of people, you know, had apartments and stuff like that. I was not ready for that phase of my life yet. So I lived on a sorority floor, and then there's, you know, me, the one lone little brown girl at the end of the hall or whatever. And, I just happened to look into having a room by myself, and, the internet was, you know, it was not the internet of now, but it was like this new thing where you could explore, and, you know, just, but you were always fearful, like, that somebody could see you or somebody would watch. So I would, like, cut the lights off in my room and sort of, like, Google things and look up stuff and, you know, try to figure out, what does, you know, being a lesbian mean, or mm-hmm. What do the letters for LGBTQ, like, what does that mean? But it was all in, like, me sitting in the dark and just the glow of my computer screen on my face. And, you know, I laugh at it now because I'm like, girl, who did you think was watching you? It was just you in a room. But it was, you know, a totally different time then. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And plus, when you are trying to figure out who you are, like, you do have to really do the research yourself and, you know, just try to figure it out on your own. Do you feel like the internet helped you a lot with that?
I think it did. And I think it made me feel a little bit more normal that there were other people, you know, like me in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, I had always been, and I use air quotes because it makes me roll my eyes now when people use the term tomboy, like, oh, you know, she was a tomboy, because I was really into, like, sports and, like, you know, don't give me another doll. Don't don't try to put me in a dress, you know, that type of thing. Yeah. And the internet, you know, allowed me to see that there were other people who showed up in the world the same way that I wanted to.
Yes.
And, you know, that brought a sense of peace, because I think, you know, back at home, while I know that there were other lesbians now, at the time, I did not know, you know, anyone who identified that way, or the folks who did, they, you know, they didn't represent the way that I do, more, you know, masculine presenting, or in Black culture, you know, a stud compared to like a butch woman on for the term that I have heard more white masculine presenting women feel comfortable with that term.
Yeah, no, that is true. And like, I know it's been a while, but can you like think back to anything on the internet particularly that helped you, any websites, any person that really helped you during this time when you were trying to figure out who you were?
No, I think it was just, I don't know if it was any particular like person or thing. It was just like, I think a lot of it was like style of dress, you know, was mm-hmm. the first thing. Like, it was okay for me to dress the way that I felt comfortable. I think that is the thing that stuck out. It wasn't a particular person that I was like, oh, I want to, you know, mimic that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was just, you know, seeing a style of dress or that really felt comfortable to me first. So that was the initial thing, because within my household, you know, my mom would critique me a lot of like, you know, why do you want to dress like that? You know, why can't you look like a girl? Why can't you, you know, why can't you show up this way? And it just didn't feel natural, you know, to me.
Yeah.
It didn't feel authentic at all. So.
Yes. No, that's true. Cause again, like you do like come to terms and you develop on your own time. And while you were doing this, like, how did it make you feel as you were coming to terms with yourself and your sexuality?
It was scary. It was extremely scary. And I think I almost used a curse word just now because it was really scary. Because, you know, you hear about the stories of other people of like, hey, you know, their family rejected them, or, you know, they were kicked out, or, you didn't hear of much violence at that point, or I hadn't heard of, you know, many violent interactions at that point where I was doing, you know, that level of research on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just really scary. Like, what do I say? You know, and I think that not having the words to be able to articulate, you know, how I felt, that felt scary. My mother being in the military, she was very, I used to call her a drill sergeant, and I would often have to remind her, like, you know, I didn't sign up for the military, right? Because so my life shouldn't feel like boot camp. But as the only girl and the oldest, it just felt like a sense of responsibility to show up a particular way, to represent the family a particular way, and I didn't want to let anybody down. So that was, you know, really scary to know that, like, I'm the only girl in the house. But the kind of woman that you want me to be, that's not, you know, in the cards for me.
Yeah.
And if it is, then I'm not being true to myself.
Yes. No, that is very true. And how did it feel when you were just like realizing that this is not who your family wanted you to be? Like, how did that make you feel? And did that kind of slow down your process into you like coming out to your friends and family in some ways?
I think that, I don't know that it slowed it down, but I think it brought me a sense of comfort that I had something that I could call it,
mm-hmm.
you know, like it had a name, it had a title. So I think that sort of calmed the anxiety around it a little bit. And then it was like, at least if I can tell myself this, hopefully at some point I'll be brave enough to say it to, you know, my family. But I felt comfortable for a while just being in the space where I was, where I could just say it to myself.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And how did it make you feel when you were able to finally say to yourself?
It felt like a hug, like a or a warm Krispy Kreme donut. It was just that sense of comfort, right?
Yeah.
Of just okay, you're owning something for yourself. And that was something that was a little different, again, growing up in my house, because everything was shared. Because, again, being the oldest, there was a sense of responsibility for my younger siblings. And, you know, it was like I was the other parent in the house. So everything that was mine was a collective of everyone's. But this was something that was mine, and I didn't have to share it. So there was comfort in just owning that for myself.
Yes. And that's good to know. And as you were finally able to like come to terms, did that make you feel different while you were in this new environment? Because I know you were now in graduate school and things are very different from undergrad. How did it feel that now that you were finally coming to terms in this new environment?
I would love to tell you that it was like like the sky opened up and the sun and the birds were like welcoming me. But law school was a totally different animal. And I think it was like, yeah, you recognize that, but now we got to get back to work. So that became like 100% my existence. So it was like, nice, high five, you got there. But now, you know, law school is your journey. So get lost in your books.
Yes, that makes sense. Law school is very difficult. And at that time, while you were in law school, did you just wait to come out later? Like, did you talk to anyone? Because I know you said, like, you came out to yourself, but was there anybody else that you talked to at this time about it?
No, so it was once I came home. Law school was an awesome experience, but I think that first of all, nobody tells you that the cost is real for that education, and you quickly run out of money. Mm-hmm. So I think that my journey with law school was not to complete it. So the lesson in it was not to complete it, but that first year, I learned a lot about myself. Mm-hmm. And it really created a path for me to explore myself in a more realistic way. So the Shamel that walked away after that first year was not the show pony that she was when she went to school, because I felt like I had the weight of my entire family in this journey, you know, going into law school. And I was the one who was always the good child. I just did what everybody told me to do. So it was an expectation. Shamel's going to go to school. Shamel's going to do this. And I fell in line with that.
Yeah.
And when that first year was over and I realized like my resources were depleted, I had to, you know, I wasn't the show pony anymore. It was, okay, now real life is hitting you. Like, what are you going to do now?
Yeah.
So to come back home and, to understand like, okay, Shamel, this is who you are realistically. And like, what is the next stage of your life going to look like? The first thing that I did was, had a conversation with my best friend and his mom, because they have always been a safe space for me. Mm-hmm. And it was just sort of like, you know, I think that I might be bisexual. And I giggle about that now because in meeting some other members of the community, they were just like, girl, that's my story too. Like, I came out as bi first. And it's like, well, why did we do that? And it's like, well, we did that because it seemed like the safe path. So if I tell you I'm bi, there's still hope that I, you know, might end up with a, you know, a husband with a 2.5, you know, kids, dog, gated, fenced house, you know, all that good stuff. Right.
Yeah.
But then, you know, very quickly in that conversation, it was like, I know that I'm not bi. So I, you know, I think it was like 2 weeks. I came back to them and I said, yeah, hey, so I'm a lesbian. Just, you know, I like to swim in the lady pool. That's all. So, and it was an interesting story there too, because my best friend and I came out to each other that same day.
Oh, wow. How was that?
It was interesting because we both told each other we were bisexual, right? And then at that 2 week point later, we both looked at each other and I was like, yeah, I'm lesbian. He was like, yeah, I'm a gay man. So that was, you know, an aha moment. And, you know, for his mom, the one thing that she said was like, I just worry that someone will hurt you all.
Mm-hmm.
For him being a gay man, there at that time, violence towards gay men was increasing. So you had the Matthew Shepard. We had the situation here in Roanoke at one of the clubs where a gentleman walked in and it's a gay club here, and which is now closed. But the gentleman walked in and shot several people.
Oh.
And yeah, so you started to see, you know, violence towards the LGBT community start to increase. And not saying that it didn't exist before, but now it was getting more, you know, television coverage and people were talking about it more. So, you know, for his mom, her concern was just that, you know, I don't want anyone to hurt you all.
Yeah. Yeah, no. And that's very valid, especially just given the environment that you were in. And how do you feel like those experiences and those situations like affected you at that time?
I think it, especially being, so the one thing that our parents told us was like, number one, you already got a stripe against you because you're Black.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Shamel, you have a stripe against you because you're a woman. And now you're adding another thing, you know, for people to side eye you on. So it was one of those things like, you know, when I am the only Black person in the room, I look and check out my safety. If I'm the only woman in the room, I look to see, you know, where the exits are to make sure I'm safe. Now, as a member of the LGBT community, I look for those same things. Like with when I'm with my partner, it's like, I want to make sure that we're good. Is anybody giving us too much attention? is it a safe space for us to exist? So, I think it was something that I was already doing, but now it's just like, okay, now this is a heightened sense of awareness and something else that I have to, you know, be on the lookout for.
Yes, that's true. And do you feel that now you're a little bit less as protective as you were at that time? Or do you feel like you're even more protective of yourself now and your environment compared to that time?
I feel like I'm even more protective of myself just because at that time, I was, I like to call myself a baby gay at that time. So it was like, I was just trying things out. Right. So I still had my, you know, feminine clothes that I would wear out because I didn't want to make anybody else feel uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be, it was harder for folks to, just to assume that I was a member of the community. Because if you looked at my aesthetically, how I showed up, it was kind of just like, okay, she looks like a tomboy, but she's, you know, wearing, you know, semi-girly clothes. Whereas now I walk in my truth and there are people who don't feel comfortable with that. And so whether it's, you know, men who feel like, well, you just haven't had the right man, or like, mm-hmm. I could show you, you know, a air quote good time, and I can change you. So, you know, I think I'm more aware now of my surroundings and my security. And, even, you know, when my girlfriend and I are together, just making sure that we're both okay. Like I made an agreement with her dad that I will make sure that we get home. And I will make sure that she's safe. We gonna always get home. So whatever that needs to look like to make sure that we do, we're gonna get home.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No. Like I think that's a good. That's a good point and a good idea, because at the end of the day, you do never know, and the world is changing so much. So it makes sense to feel like that. How does your girlfriend feel about this? Is she also as like open and walking in her truth as you are, or is it a different story?
She is 100% comfortable in who she is as a person and in her lesbianism. She is a strong personality, and she doesn't take much mess. So that's good. But I think too, we just have two different lived experiences. Whereas I think growing up as a Black female, like, you just are taught to be on guard all the time. And then for her as a white female, she is a little more carefree than I am. So sometimes that sort of clashes. Sometimes that's a bit of a pain point, because she's like, why are you so like nervous and anxious and worried? You know, we should just be free to exist. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, we've just grown up in two different worlds.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, so she is learning to deal with my, anxiety and awareness of our surroundings. And I'm trying to be a little bit more, you know, open and free, you know, to things. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense, like different lived experiences. Do you feel like after your whole like coming out experience, do you feel like that's kind of shaped how you are today? Or do you feel like you've slowly kind of just developed into who you are just because of like your life experiences?
I think it's a combination of both. Lost my mom when she was 45 and I was 24. And I think that there was a lot of growing up that happened, you know, in that space.
Yeah.
And with her passing and being the matriarch of our little family now, I found that with her passing at 45, that life is short, right? So it was like, live your truth, because you don't know how many days you have. And there were so many things that I would have loved for my mom to be able to see, whether it was, you know, me having my own place and being established and being able to, you know, treat her out to like a vacation or dinners or whatever, but we never got that opportunity. So the one thing that I told myself at the time that she passed, I mean, from the time she took her last breath to the time that I got across town to my house, was that I was going to live my life. And for anybody who had a problem with it, that was their problem. So it was 100% like me understanding that the pain of my mom's passing was also a blessing for me, because that's where I found myself and I was able to grow me without being concerned about the judgment of whether it was the family or the world, because at that point I didn't care. So
yes, I'm so sorry to hear about your mom's passing. And while she was still alive, what did you ever get the chance to tell her? Were you able to come out to her? And how was that experience if you were able to do that?
Yes, I did. So I giggle because my coming out story is so, so trash, because I was too old to be navigating the world the way that I did. So I just happened to sneak a girlfriend of mine into my mom's house. And not that we did anything in particular. We just, you know, were spending time together, just watching TV and talking or whatever. But my mom had rules in her house that, you know, you just didn't have company, you know, over. We just didn't do that if it wasn't family. So my mom just happened to get up in the middle of the night and saw her car in the driveway. And she, you know, I was thinking that we had got away with it.
Right? Yeah.
So she, you know, my girlfriend at the time sort of scuttled out early in the morning and left. And, you know, my mom's getting up and ready for work, and I'm just bebopping, getting ready for work. And my mom calls me when I'm at work, and she says, "So, Shamil, why was that little girl at my house?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And, and you know, and I'm like, I am in my 20s sneaking somebody in my mama's house. This is stuff I should have been doing when I was like 15, 16. But now here I am in my 20s, like, you know, trying to figure out how I'm going to get away with this.
Yes.
So my mom was like, "Yeah, you know, we're going to have a conversation when you come home." So I was trying to find everything to do. If there would have been like a community service project that needed, you know, a week-long volunteer, I would have signed up. So I could have escaped that conversation, because I was just like, I knew that was wrong to have, you know, someone in my mom's house without her knowledge. So, you know, I finally got together and was like, you know, you can't ride around all day. You got to go home. So I, you know, came into the house, and my brother, who is 18 months younger than I, he was in my mom's room. And I come in, and my mom was like, "Is there something you want to tell me?" And I'm like, "No, like, what do you mean? I got nothing." And she's like, "You know, don't play with me, girl." And I was like, "Ah, no, what do you think I want to tell you?" And she was like, "Shamil, like, what is happening with you and that girl?" And I was like, "I don't know. What do you think's happening?" And so, you know, I just sort of hemmed and hawed for a while. And then she was like, "I mean, is that your girlfriend?" And I was like, "Well, if you think it is, then okay, we'll go with that." And she was like, "I need you to say it." And I'm like, "Well, you said it, so that's enough." And, you know, at some point I was like, "Okay, Shamil, like, you need to be an adult." And I was like, "You know, yes, that's what it is." And there was an interesting part there, because I had had a prom date back when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And somehow my mom thought that was a love connection for life. So she was like, "Well, you know, you dated that boy." I was like, "We went to prom, mama." What? That was like 4 years ago. Like, why are we still talking about this? And he was like, "You know, well, you know, I thought that was a thing, and you know, you weren't being honest with me." And I was like, "But what was I mean, we went to prom, you know?" Mm-hmm. And at some point, you know, we were going back and forth, and my brother, you know, just sort of looked at my mama and said, "Mama, Shamil has always been Shamil. And, you know, if you are honest with yourself, you knew this whole time." Mm-hmm. And he was like, "This is my sister and I love her. And, you know, as long as she doesn't try to steal any of my girlfriends, I'm cool with that." And I was like, "All your girlfriends are ugly." "What? Which one of my girlfriends?" "All my girlfriends are like bomb." And I was like, "No, they're not." And we're going back and forth. And mom was like, "This is not even what we're talking about. Like, where did this go off the rails?" Right?
Yes.
So it was one of those things that, you know, I will always appreciate that space that my brother, you know, had for me, and just saying like, "That's my sister and I love her, and that's not going to change who she is to me. You know, she's, you know, always been an awesome person, and that's not going to change just because of, you know, who she loves."
Yeah. Oh, yes. That's a beautiful story.
Yeah.
Very funny. How do you feel like that support felt like at that time? Like, how did it feel to finally be able to, you know, tell your family who you really were?
I think it was really good, because I think that, like, all these years later, right, going back and looking at that scenario, or the scenario of friends, you know, who I've talked to, is that we give a lot of credence to people who, like, at the end of the day, don't care about us the way that we don't care about them that way, but we care about their opinions, right? So strangers.
Yeah.
Or even, like, family members. Like, there are... like, okay, family member, you have your opinion, but like, it doesn't nourish me. It doesn't matter what you think, right?
Yeah.
So to me, you know, just being able to have that conversation with my immediate family after they knew, I didn't care who else knew. So what everybody else thought after that, it did not matter at all. So I never have had that conversation with the rest of my family, because I think for me in particular, it's like, if you invite people's opinion in it into your life, they will give it. But if you make it like, I don't care what your opinion is, people are less likely to give it. Right.
Yeah.
So there have been very few people, whether it's in my family or coworkers or just in my life in general, who have told me what they think, because I don't give them the option of giving that to me, because I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's true. Yeah. Like, it's your truth and it's up to you, like, you know, who you want to tell it to. And do you feel like any family member that did find out, or any friend that did find out after you came out, do you feel like your relationship changed with them, or did it just stay the same?
So I think from the family perspective, my grandmother, who was really deep in the church, I think she had I know she had some really strong feelings about what my end of days would look like, where my final destination would be. And she would share that with my mom, but she wouldn't share it with me. So my mom would be like, oh, your grandma's over there crying. And I'm like, what is she crying about? And she was like, well, you know, she thinks you're going to hell. And I was like, oh, what'd I do? And she was like, really?
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, no, but what did I do? And she was like, are you like, you know, you being a lesbian? And I was like, oh, is she still on that? I'll talk to grandma, you know, later. Mm-hmm. And then when I would go have a conversation with her, and I'm like, well, grandma, I don't believe that for my life. And I think that there are other things in life that you should focus on. And if you want to pray for me, fantastic. But don't let that be the thing that you pray to change, because that's not something I want to change about myself. So our prayers will cancel each other out. So we're going to pray to change it. I'm going to pray that, you know, I fall deeper into who I am in that space. So it's going to end up being nothing. So if there's something you want to pray for me on, find something else. You know? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, that was the only family member that you know, we had to have any, you know, additional conversations with, was her. But then from the friend perspective or the coworker perspective, mm-hmm. I think the one part that was a little interesting was people's way of connecting with you.
Mm-hmm.
So I have had some really uncomfortable situations with folks who are just like, you know, It was weird because I would have, you know, coworkers or friends who would come and be like, yeah, so, you know, I had a dream that I was intimate with this woman. And I'm like, why are you sharing this with me? Why are you telling me this? I don't care. And like, they would want to have this deep conversation and like, and not, they're not reading the room at all. Cause I was like, do you see this look of like terror on my face as you continue to talk?
Yeah.
So, you know, those types of things were, you know, always interesting. And then for male friends, they look at you and want to have like that bro moment with you, like, oh, is that your girlfriend? High five, bro. Or like, oh, you walked in with all the sexy ladies. And I was like, okay, weird, but all right, thanks, friend.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did that make you feel, like, knowing that your friends were now kind of like viewing you differently than before?
Well, so it's different. So like, you know, you have different pockets of friends. So the friends who I had grown up with and people who have known me were just like, girl, duh. You know, when I was like, yeah, I just want to tell you this. And they're just like, uh-huh. Yeah. So what's new? Like, knew this, was just waiting for you to get there. Right. But then for like coworkers and those level of friends, I think it had to settle down and just become the norm for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that for some of those folks, what they needed to realize was that it was borderline like sexual harassment for some of the activities that happened. So like if a man was in the workplace and did some of those things to a woman, that would be HR worthy. But they felt like because they were sharing it with me as a woman, that it was okay. And I'm like, no, because I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yes, that's true. And how did you feel in the workspace, like, after you came out, especially like with your male coworkers treating you differently, but just overall in general, like how did it feel like working after you came out, especially in the Roanoke area?
It was really good because Allstate has a culture of inclusivity, and we have employee resource groups who deal with, not deal with, but support the needs of different marginalized groups within the company. So creating safe spaces there and having a zero tolerance policy for any kind of activity that would discriminate against anyone because of, whether it's their sexual orientation or their race or their religion, those types of things. So, work was really, really cool. I have a really interesting story there. I was a trainer at one point, and we had some folks come over from India, who I was in the process of training. So, one of the practices that we had was that the leadership team and the trainers and the trainees would go out for like a big, like company dinner or whatever. And this was like my first time, being invited to one. So I was like super nervous. And because, there are going to be senior leaders there, and it's not really, many times where you got to sort of hobnob with those folks. So, I'm super nervous. And they're just like, yeah, bring a guest. And I'm like, okay. So I was like, okay, we're going to rip the Band-Aid off this one. So my girlfriend at the time, I was like, hey, there's this company dinner. I really would like to take you. And she's like, are you ready for that? Are you okay? And I was like, yeah, let's go. Wide-eyed and like sweating, but let's
Yes.
go.
And sorry, what kind of work environment was this? You could just give like general details as to what kind of work you were doing at the time.
So it was just data processing, and we were in the process of transitioning some work to India, and so I was training those folks. So they had come over for a period of time to sort of learn the functions and things like that.
Yeah, and so how was it when you guys were going to this work dinner party?
So we go there, and we're sitting around the table, and I think it was like 15 people or so just sitting there. And we had went to Nawab downtown, so an Indian restaurant downtown. And we were, everybody was ordering their food, and that awkward silence after everybody's ordered, like, okay, what are we gonna talk about? And so I just happened to be sitting at the head of the table. So one of the managers just sort of looked at me and was like, so Shamel, like, who's your guest? And I'm like, oh crap, this is how we're starting. Like, what do I say? So I like looked at my girlfriend, and she said, these are your folks. So whatever you want to say. And I was like, so the manager was like, is this your sister? Now me and my girlfriend did not look anything alike at all. And so that was a thing, right? And I was like, well, no, actually, this is my girlfriend. And I just waited for that pause, and I waited for everybody's heads to like blow off. And that never happened. And the manager just sort of looked. She, took a sip of water, and she says, so, like, how'd y'all meet? And it was just like a regular conversation. And like, I was so tense, and I was so worried. And I looked around the table at everybody else, and they were just engaged because they just wanted to hear the story. And it did not matter that, this was, my significant other, and we just happened to be, two women.
Yeah, that's really amazing. And was this kind of like your first time like presenting your girlfriend in public, or had you done this before?
Like at work, yes, this was like in the club scene. So the club scene being the park, right? But in in my personal life, it wasn't, a big thing. But like in a work function or work capacity, this was the first time like bringing someone, to an event. So yeah, it was kind of a big deal. And then after that, I was like, oh yeah, I'm ready. Bring on next ones. We're gonna do this.
Yes, because it kind of just like gives you that like confidence boost that like, okay, I got through this. I can get through something else. That's really interesting. And I guess like kind of going back, like when was the first time that you like actually presented your girlfriend to someone or your family or some or a people?
So my first girlfriend, she came around the family and stuff like that, but we, people just, they still say that now, but in a polite way, people will just say, "Oh, your friend, your friend, your friend." And I'm like, okay, I have lots of friends, but this is a different friend. So my very first girlfriend, she would come to, different family things and stuff, but people were just like, "Oh, that's just Shamel's friend." And that was, before I came out. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess kind of also going back a little bit, like, how was your first like queer sexual experience while you were figuring everything out?
Awkward. Because I think it was awkward, number one, because I'm like, I feel like I'm 16 again. Like, and it this feels like I don't know what to do. I have no idea what I'm doing here. So I'm just gonna fumble my way, through this. So it felt very awkward. So it felt, it felt like, losing your virginity, all over again in your 20s. So it felt weird. But then I think there, after once I had my second girlfriend, it was weird as well, because she was like the I like I'm trying to find the right words for it, but he was like the epitome of like a goddess to me, at that time. So I was like, oh my God, I have no idea what she sees in me. Why is she talking to me? Right. So when she was interested in me back, and we got to the space where we were going to be intimate, I was like, oh, I'm nervous. And I remember her saying to me, "Well, what would you do if I, like took all my clothes off and, and was ready?" And I would just, I answered like a dude and was like, "Yeah, I handle my business. What does that mean? I don't know." And I was just talking, and I wanted to sound like cool. So she like jumped up, and she, was like, all right, and went to get shower and everything. And I was like having this like holy crap moment. What did I just agree to? I don't know what I just said. I don't know what any of that means that I just told her. Like, I am setting this expectation that I possibly could fail.
Yes.
And it was I was so embarrassed, I'm embarrassed now to be like, why did you say that? You were such a doofus.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you were younger, and also, again, you were still trying to figure everything out. So, like, it makes sense. And I'm sure by now, like, do you feel like I guess now, do you feel more comfortable, obviously, as things have, as you've grown and developed?
I would love to tell you yes, Michelle, because I'm 40, and I would love to say that, I've gotten it a little bit together. I definitely am way more comfortable in myself, now. But I don't know that in my lifetime I will ever lose the awkward little me that still exists within this body. So I am sure I will say another awkward thing and do another weird, a weird thing that, will have my girlfriend looking at me and saying like, what are you, a 14-year-old prepubescent little boy? Like, what are you
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure, like, obviously, with time and stuff, like, things will change. But that is interesting. And how did you meet your current partner that you're with today?
So the I was like, I know, I hope we have time for this because this is a pretty long story, but I'll try to keep it as short as possible. I am very active in our LGBT employee resource group at Allstate. Currently, I'm the president of our national board, but I was am also a field leader here in the Roanoke area. So we have about 22 active chapters and we have over 2,000 members throughout the company, mm-hmm. and that's ever growing. But we create safe spaces for employees. We have honest and real conversations about the lived experience of the LGBT community within the walls of the company, as well as outside of in our communities. Mm-hmm. So with that, we had an opportunity to speak at a national conference. It's called Out and Equal. And we presented a couple topics over the last couple years. But my current girlfriend was there and was able to hear me present at one of the conferences. And we were friends. Just because I always shout out Virginia wherever I go. So the conference was in Seattle. Uh-huh. And represent for Roanoke, Virginia, everywhere I am. And it was funny because afterwards she walked up to me and said, "Oh my God, like I'm from Virginia too. Like who would have ever thought that, you know, two Virginia girls would have met in Seattle."
Yeah.
And we just, you know, remained friends for an extended period of time. And then our, you know, paths crossed again a little later on in life, and here we are today.
Oh, that's beautiful. And how do you, I mean, I know we mentioned talked about this a little bit earlier, but how do you feel now that your relationship is currently compared to your previous relationships that you had before?
I think that the big thing is I took a really long time, like building my confidence.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the years of wanting to fit into the mold that my family had for me, was a heavy burden, and that I was very apprehensive in, going down the path that I wanted to, or, you know, being the Shamel that I could see for myself. But being like nervous that it would upset, you know, our family dynamic. So I think that now I am 100% confident in me, which reflects in my relationships better. So I think that every relationship that I've ever had has been a really awesome lesson that has challenged my way of thinking. And there was a lot of work that I needed to do and a lot of baggage that I carried that I didn't know. So mm-hmm. therapy has 100% been an important additive in my life,
mm-hmm.
To help me sort of process some of those things. So I think I am the healthiest that I've ever been because I am real with myself on like who I am and how I show up in the world.
Yeah.
And I think that for my past relationships, a lot of those young ladies did not get the benefit of having me not be as fleshed out as I am now. So
yeah, that's good to hear. Like growth and self-development is always something that we are striving to achieve. And besides therapy, were there other like support services that you used in order to get to where you are today?
Yeah, I think conversation is always a big one for me. Like hearing other people's lived experiences and talking to people matters. I was very bullheaded when I was younger. Like, this is the way it is, period.
Yeah.
Because I said so. Right?
Yeah.
But I think that being able to hear other people's lived experiences and understanding like where my biases are, I think that a lot of times people feel like because you are a member of a marginalized community that you can't have biases, and that's not true. So it's like I had a lot that I had to come to terms with, come to grips with, and it definitely cleared up my vision on how I see the world now. So,
mm-hmm.
and it's having to hold myself accountable and having friends around me that hold me accountable as well. And not telling me that, you know, everything I do is fantastic and wonderful, but really calling me when I, you know, step outside of a lane, or if I, you know, say something that is ignorant. It's important to have people around you to hold you accountable to that.
Yeah. And do you feel like the support of therapy as well as your friends have shaped how you view yourself as a, like, a lesbian here in the Roanoke Valley?
I definitely think so. 100%.
Yeah,
I definitely think so. It is beautiful just to see how the Roanoke area has grown and become a bit of a safe haven. Are we 100% there? Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. But just to see where the pride parades here have grown, to hear more people speaking up and walking in their truth, that was definitely a lot different, you know, in times past. But just to be able to see that continuously growing, mm-hmm. It matters. Joe Cobb, the fact that our vice mayor is an openly gay man and speaks his truth, yeah. And knowing Joe for years and just being, I used to be a member of MCC when he was pastor there, uh-huh. And just to see like how his journey has been is amazing. So again, it's not saying that we get it right 100% of the time, but also patting ourselves on the back for the fact that we definitely are not where we used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's very true. And like now there's various organizations and support system here as well. And a lot of strides are being made to be more of like an inclusive city. Have you ever used one of the support systems that are present here, like the drop-in center, the House of Expression?
Oh, yes. So I am a member of the House of Expression and the drop-in center. So when the drop-in center was created, I was a volunteer. So I would go to the clubs and give out condom packs. And when the drop-in center used to have a support group for gay men, and there was no support group for lesbians. So I would just go to those meetings because I said, there's no meeting for me, but I need, you know, I need to be able to talk to, you know, other folks too, who are, you know, in the community. So I was the one lesbian who showed up to, you know, the gay men's events. And I said, well, until there's a lesbian space, you know, I'm here with y'all. Hey. So yeah, it's definitely have used the drop-in center, and they do and have done fantastic work for years. I think the being able to go to clubs and give out condom packs and do education was really eye-opening. And I think for that little introvert that was for me in the past, it kind of opened me up to, you know, connecting with the community in a real way. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that is true. And what role has the House of Expression played in your adult life? I'm currently working with them a little bit. How have you felt like being part of that organization?
So for any house culture, it's that sense of family and community. I'm newer to the house, so the a lot of the heavy lifting and a lot of the work that was done was prior to my involvement to with it. So it is awesome to be a member who is learning from the experiences of those who, you know, created the house, and being an active part of the direction that the house will go in the future. So I know there's some amazing work that the mother and father of the house are doing with the Roanoke City Police Department to help with some education and training for new cadets. So we have some, you know, input in giving some education on how they interact with, you know, our community when they are out on calls, and being a safe space for them to be able to ask questions, because that's a big thing, right? A lot of times people, you know, have these preconceived notions because they've never been able to be in a space where they can ask questions and not feel judged or feel like, you know, hey, that was a dumb question. So we have offered ourselves in that way. Also, there is a connection into the LGBT organizations within the school systems for the high schools to be able to, you know, be mentors for those folks and ask questions and see where there's opportunities for partnership with us. And then two, just with the history project, that was a big one that we wanted to make sure that voices of color were represented within the history project. So,
yes, that's amazing. And how have you felt as a woman of color, like in these spaces that you are in currently?
So which spaces?
So spaces specifically like the House of Expression. At work, you said you also do a lot of work as well with like community involvement with the LGBTQ plus community, the drop-in center. Like, how have you felt like as a woman of color? Were you ever like tokenized in some way? Have you felt unsafe in these spaces?
Yes. So, so tokenizing is 100% a thing, right? But I think the one thing that I have come to terms with is that you can use it as a way to get other people into a space that they otherwise did not know existed, or they wouldn't have been invited to, right? Mm-hmm. So if need to me to be your token to be like, oh, well, Shamel's, you know, one of those good folks. It's like, okay, great. That's great that you think that. And not saying that I'm not, mm-hmm. but let me bring some other folks. Like I've, you know, I'm holding the door open. Let's get as many folks as possible into this space so that, you know, if I have to be the comfort level for the non-POC in the room for them to be okay with other people having space there, then use me as your token. Yeah. So if you look at me as, you know, the good POC or, you know, the amicable one, fine. But we are going to create spaces for more of us to exist in spaces that, again, are beneficial to others. It will become beneficial to us as well.
Yes, that is very true. And while you have been in the spaces for a while, do you feel that now more people of color are more comfortable to be in these spaces, or do you feel like more work really needs to be done to include more people of color in these spaces for LGBTQ plus people?
I think it's a combination of both, because like sometimes for us as POC, when we get into those spaces, it feels phony and it feels fake, right? So it just, it's like, I worked this hard to get right here, and this is just a bunch of like, you know, it's some tomfoolery is what it is. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you find folks who are just like, I don't really want to put on a show. I don't really want to be fake in this space. But I think sometimes what we need to realize is like everybody else in this space is being fake. So they're being fake to each other. So it's not just fake because you're here. It's fake, period. So, yeah. So it's like play the game to get the benefit from it. So, for instance, there are whether it's resources that wouldn't be available to our communities. It's like, if I need to play the game to get resources to our community, I'll do that. So it's just like, I know that, again, these people aren't being fake just for me. They're fake, period. So whatever I need to do is, you know, to make sure that resources are spread out, you know, amongst the community, then I'll do that, you know, for the benefit of the greater good.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And do you feel like, you know, maybe it also comes with a difference in age? Like, do you feel like the older gays versus the new gays view these spaces differently?
That I don't know. I do think that the one thing that I love about the younger generation of folks is they do not play games when it comes to their time and their commitment to things. Mm-hmm. So if it's like, if it don't look right, if it don't feel right, I'm not staying here. I'm not gonna waste my time in this space. And either I will create a space that makes sense, or I'll just find something that feels, you know, a little bit more like what I'm looking for. Whereas as for me, like I have found in situations, I might invest a little too long or stay in a space a little too long, hoping that I can, you know, bring about some change and, you know, change an established culture. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't, but you definitely wear the scars of that. Whereas for the younger generation, they're just like, oh, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. No. And they peace out in a heartbeat.
Yes, no, that's true. And especially now with the younger generation, they're very like active in the community and they've caused a lot of change to happen, a lot of good change to happen. Do you feel that more change is going to occur in the LGBTQ plus community as, you know, we continue on with our lives? Like, has it been more drastic now or less compared to when, I guess, you were growing up and in the community?
I think that there is a there was a really large focus at one point on marriage equality, and I think that, you know, for some folks, once marriage equality passed, it was just kind of like, yep, you know, the needs of the LGBT community, we did it, check mark, done. Mm-hmm. But I think that with the creation of the additional letters in our community and the additional family members that we have there, it is going to be an ever-growing situation and we're going to forever have to be allies to each other and create spaces for the change and the evolution of what the community's needs are. So I love the fact that there is a lot of attention on the trans community right now. Mm-hmm. Because it's long overdue. The violence against the trans community, while we do see an increase in the murder rate, we have to ask ourselves, like, why that's a thing? Because mm-hmm. it's not just happening. It's just, it was not reported, you know, previously. And it's been a problem for a while. And people should not lose their lives for being who they are.
Yeah.
Like, why is that a thing? And I just think that the younger generation are folks who are 100% vocal and like out in the streets and ready to make some change happen. So I'm just excited because it is a, it's definitely a, it's a journey and it's not one and done. So I love the fact that, you know, for those of us who are a little older and our knees don't work as good as they used to be able to pass the baton off to the next generation, to run it forward, to then pass it off again. I think that it is fantastic.
Yes. Yes, that is very true. And specifically to you, like, what changes would you like to see in the future, either here in Roanoke or just in the U.S. or the world? It's really up to you.
So I think that, you know, for Roanoke in particular, we are a bit of a sleepy town and things tend to get to us a little later than they do, you know, other communities. So I think the one thing that would be really important for Roanoke, even for me, is just being educated and updated on what's happening in other parts of the U.S. and then what's happening in other parts of the world, because eventually it's going to come this way, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, what can we do to be prepared? What can we do to be an active part of making the change happen so that when it does hit Roanoke, we don't feel blindsided and it makes it seem like we don't care until it hits our community, when we are a very caring community of people who are, you know, willing to fight for what we want. But it's just, we're just slow to get there sometimes. So.
Yes, yes. No, that is true. And I also hope, too, that change comes here in the Roanoke Valley, but also as well as everywhere else in the world. But I just want to say thank you so much for this. I have learned a lot about you. You've provided a lot of insight for this project. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this.
No problem. And thank you all so much for providing this opportunity and just for, you know, anyone who would, you know, listen after this, it's like your voice matters. So anytime you have an opportunity to share your story, that's the most valuable thing that you can ever give anyone, is your perspective and your lived experience.
Yes, that is true. Thank you.